We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Bochy and Rigetti both run in last night's game.
Crazy. Fourth time Rigetti's been run as a coach in his stead as either a manager or stepping in. That was an odd scene. Ron Wotus would have been the next one to go out.
You think Bochy just wanted to grab some dinner and get home early?
I think it's one of those things where maybe he just wanted to go have a little wine back in his office and watch the game on TV. Enough is enough. That game was ugly early. They're getting squeezed by the ump. You find yourself down 6-0 in the second, and you're already 24 games below 500. You can't fault the skipper for wanting to just take a powder.
He knew it was over.
Yeah, without
a doubt. What do you do?
What gives you that impression? What do you mean it's over, down 6-0?
Second inning, it was over.
Do you see them in a situation where they're down 2 runs by the sixth? I've gotten to the point where I realize they're not coming back from this.
No.
And I'm talking 2 runs. You see 6 runs, you are done. You can check out. They're not coming back. And they got no firepower on this team whatsoever.
And you don't think the players know it's over by the end too, Joe? They know. I've been on some sorry teams, guys. I told you when I was in Cincinnati, and you out there just fighting to hold onto your butt. You know that you're not winning that game. You're already down by 14, and it's the first quarter. You look up, and you look on the sideline, and you see guys, and you watch their demeanor, and you know in your head it's over, and you just go out there and you say, I'm just going to fight, continue to fight. This team, they know it. You see Johnny Cueto, the way he's pitching. You see the way that guys are pitching. Things aren't going their way. It's over. It's just an over. This is a throwaway year.
One of the sources for this team's great strength over the last few years has become its ultimate weakness, and there's nothing they can do about it. It's the ballpark. The ballpark attracts a ton of people. The ballpark plays a huge role in sellouts, in revenue. The ballpark is widely regarded one of the best in the business. I don't disagree with any of that. It's a great place to see a game. Beautiful views. The upper deck seats are better than any upper deck seats you'll find anywhere in professional sports. But they can't hit home runs in this park, and that is killing them with the way baseball is played in the year 2017. Brandon Crawford was at a kids' camp, kids youth baseball camp, like last Friday, I believe it was. And he was asked a lot of questions from the kids, and he was talking about, you know, how big are major league fields? And quote, they vary in size. Ours is one of the bigger ones, 421 feet to right center, which should be changed, Crawford said. I was at that game against Cleveland last Monday when he put one right off the top of the wall in right center. This is a left-handed bat that comes nowhere near the power numbers you would expect from a left-handed bat because of the park. Now, he's struggling this year in general, but go through the top home run hitting teams. What do they have in common? Houston, number one, playoff team. Texas, number two, in the thick of it. Milwaukee, number three, led the Central for a while, still in it. Dodgers, number four, dominating. Mets, number five, bums. Washington, number six, leading the division. Tampa Bay, number seven, in the thick of it. Yankees, number eight, in the thick of it. Baltimore, number nine, nothing. Oakland, number 10, struggling. Teams that hit home runs in this day and age find themselves in serious contention. That's not the be-all, end-all stat, but this is the day and age. Baseball isn't interested in 300 hitters, right? Eduardo Nunez has hit 300 how many years in a row? He's Mr. Tradable. No one cares. No one wants a 300 hitter. What they want are power guys like Chris Davis, who might hit 227, but he's going to give you 40 bombs. That's what baseball is moving towards. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. It's all about the strikeout, the walk, and the home run. Those are your three absolutes. That's it. No one's looking to get on base, bunt a guy over, knock him around. This is the way baseball is played now. You go to the teams at the bottom of the list in home runs. San Francisco, nothing. Pittsburgh, they're in contention. Phillies, second or the worst team in MLB. Boston's in there. They're leading the division. But you got Atlanta, the White Sox, the Angels, on and on. You've got to be able to hit home runs. This team can't hit home runs for anything this year at that park. The park's killing them.
And here's the thing, though. To the flip side of that, though, Joe, you have 50 games, what, in 100 and whatever many games it is season, you play 80 or whatever at home. So it's not that everyone else is hitting home runs in their park either. They're not playing great baseball. So they're losing games, even though they're playing at home, then just go win. And they're not even doing that. So I understand they need to hit home runs. Yes, you need to have power, and it's about strikeout and that. But at the same sense, you got to find a way to get wins too.
Do you think this is rock bottom for this franchise? What we're seeing this year, a lot of people understand, you know what, chalk it up, it happens. I'm one of those people. Big deal. It's one bad year compared to a lot of glory and a lot of parades you've been able to enjoy for a good duration of time. But is this rock bottom, or is this thing going to get worse, Dibs?
I think this is about it. It's about as bottom as you can get. They're on pace to lose, 103, 104 games right now? It's a miserable season. You haven't had this many losses since you came out here from New York. So, yes, I think this is going to be rock bottom. Now, can you turn it around and be a contender next year, keeping 20 of these 25 players? I don't think so, unless you bring in really big bats to fill the hole at third base, left field, center field. I know you're stuck with your right fielder for another season, but you're going to need some more power from the power spots. And I would argue that, you know, Brandon Crawford is not right, because the park is the park, and you have all these guys right. invested in the pitching. Madison Bumgarner is going to be a $100 to $200 million guy. Johnny Cueto is over $100 million. Samardzija is $95. Kane's getting $21 million a year. You're built on pitching and defense. You have elite defense. Your pitching hasn't been very good. You can survive in that park winning games 3-2 if your power guys produce a little bit. And that's Crawford, that's Belt. Pence has done nothing. So as much as you can look at the ballpark is what it's going to be. You've won three titles there. The fact that the park was too big wasn't a problem in 10, 12, or 14, right, was it?
Right. But were they power guys back then? Or did they lean on great pitching and a team effort? Top to bottom in those playoff runs, they got efforts out of everybody.
Right.
Everybody showed up for that. This year, nobody's showing up. And what happens when your star pitching takes a step back? Someone else has got to step up. At some point, the highlight for this team has been put on the bats, and you're realizing just how bad they are. Defensively, they're not one of the best in the business this year like they used to be. And from a pitching standpoint, they're not one of the best in the business like they used to be. So then you turn your attention to the bats. All right, well, maybe this is a season where the bats bail them.
No.
So
not only do they not bail them out, they never come through. I mean, this is, like I said, the other night, I think it was the Padre game on Sunday. It was like 5-3 going to the seventh. It's like they have nine outs to go. They can't score two runs. Like, that's the mindset I have with them.
Right.
And this isn't to try to take a shot at them. No. It's just what they've shown this year.
And I don't think,
nine outs, they cannot generate two runs.
And I don't think it's rock bottom. When you say rock bottom, are they going to lose 100 games next year? No. But the course that this team is choosing to take, is saying they're going to stay put and they're going to still compete, that's foolish. It's absolutely foolish. And you say that, hey, it's just a down year. We're going to get better. We're not going to make any big trades. We're not going to make any splash. We'll get a hitter for third base. But we're going to, after that, the whole team, pretty much these guys are coming back. They won't be at rock bottom. They won't lose maybe this many games next year, but they won't contend.
Yeah, but for you to think 100 losses is rock bottom, what happens if they come back next year and they miss the playoffs?
Exactly.
By five games. Say next year they go 81-81. Right? That's not an improvement. This team is World Series contention or bust. So if you lose 100 games this year and you lose 89 games next season, that's not an improvement. When I mean rock bottom, I mean you're about to fall from grace and become a bottom dweller for the foreseeable future. I'm not talking about this day in history is the farthest below 500 they'll be, and then they'll climb a little bit back and next year they'll be a little bit better. When I say rock bottom, I'm talking about a team that just won three World Series. Now it's all over. And for the next few years, you are going to be on the slow, steady decline until you figure out you need to rebuild. I think the biggest mistake they're making is evaluating themselves as a team that can contend next year.
I agree.
Going into this deadline saying, we're a couple tweaks away. What are the tweaks? Bumgarner's has already peaked in his regular season. He'll never put up a better regular season than what you've already seen. Postseason dominance, one of the best we've ever seen. But from a regular season perspective, what is out there to tell you that at some point he's going to go 22-3 with a 1.89 ERA? He doesn't have that in him. Postseason, he does. Regular season, he doesn't. So what else is there? Cueto's not getting any better. Cueto doesn't even want to be here. He wants the money. That's the difference. If he opts in, it's not because he loves San Francisco. He's already made it clear. He doesn't like the locker room, and he wants to finish his career in the American League. If he stays, he's staying for the money. It's staying for the financial reasons. Hunter Pence, he's not getting younger. Belt, you've already seen his max. Crawford, you've seen his max. Joe Panik, maybe there's something there, but it's never going to be power. Third base is a hole. And Arroyo getting injured and losing his entire season, that's going to hurt you in development. What are you going to do about left field? And while Span has a little bit of power, that's not your answer in center. You get serious problems. Plus, what do you have in the bullpen? It's not like Melanson's 26 years old.
Right.
You got nothing.
You're an aging team. You're not going to. This team, if they don't make a major overhaul, they're going to continue to tank, Dibs, because it's you're wanting these older guys and guys to step up and turn back the clock. They can do it on every not every night. You can see great players show you signs of greatness and go out one night and go 3-for-3 or four and have that great night. But when you start in 30s and stuff and you see where these Buster and all these guys getting older, you're trying to save them. They're not going to be able to stay consistent. It's just a matter of life.
I think the biggest thing they're facing is that so many of these guys are on the hook for such big deals that to totally blow the thing up, Joe, would take too much to do at the deadline. You figure, bring all these guys back one more time. You're 1 year closer to the end of Samardzija. Kane will be done, et cetera, et cetera. Pence will be close to done. If you can't do it next year, then you can completely wipe the slate clean.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
We've got $1,000 to give away at the top of the hour for the 4K Day Cash Contest. And like you just heard, the head coach, Jack Del Rio, joining us at 8:15. Great to have you in today. The latest in the Kyrie Irving LeBron James saga. We really thought coming off that NBA Finals that maybe, just maybe, we were going to be headed for a fourth installment, Warriors versus Cavs. After all, who in the East was going to challenge LeBron James? The Boston Celtics? A nice thought. How far did that series go? 5 games? Suddenly the Celtics, after losing in 5, are going to find a way to win in 7? I don't know. Maybe Gordon Hayward could do that. But it appears as if the Cavaliers have found a way to implode on their own. Friday, the report comes out that Kyrie Irving wants to be traded out of Cleveland. On Sunday, LeBron James, as he continues to set the stage for his own departure from Cleveland, but this time around, as a hero rather than a villain, makes it very clear he won't be waiving his no-trade clause. He's staying in Cleveland this year, people. Kyrie might want out, but LeBron's going to stay because it means that much to him. Then yesterday, Stephen A. Smith, on his radio show, had this to say.
Kyrie signed a 5-year deal in excess of $90 million right before LeBron returned to Cleveland, like a week or two before LeBron returned to Cleveland. Kyrie did not know that LeBron was coming back to Cleveland. So Kyrie was salty from that moment. Now, it doesn't mean that they had a contentious relationship. They've talked on many occasions. According to my sources, LeBron James has tried to appease him at every turn. A matter of fact, I had sources in LeBron James' camp literally tell me, and I'm quoting Charles, if Kyrie Irving was in front of LeBron James right now, LeBron James would be tempted, quote, to beat his ass, end quote.
So Batman finds out that Robin wants his own movie franchise and Batman doesn't like what he's hearing. In fact, he wants to beat Robin's ass. Lo Neal, from the beginning, you have thought this is all a big conspiracy that these two are working together. Does this report change any of that for you?
It's weird and people might call me crazy, but it doesn't. I think Stephen A's right in the game with them. I mean, a lot of times guys say things to get things out there to start causing more confusion, but I think that Kyrie, Bale, and LeBron wants this trade to go down. It's just crazy to me. You're talking about how these two, how they fall from grace so quick. Every time you see the Cavs, you see Kyrie and LeBron hugging, even when the defeat, Kyrie's waiting in the hallway, waiting in the hallway to hug and embrace LeBron here when they played the Dubs in Game 6. He's waiting in the hallway, 5, to hug him, to say, hey, we'll be back. And then after that, they both walk into the locker room together. Hell, 2 weeks ago, you hear Kyrie come out and say, I want to go wherever LeBron goes. I'll go with him, and I'll go play. And all of a sudden, this turn of events and change of heart, and now Stephen A's reporting it's all started because he didn't tell him when he was decided to come back, and he just got $90 million. What did that have to do with your money? You still got your $90 million. LeBron didn't come in and take any of the money. Spotlight, well, if you're trying to win championships, this is the best way to do it is with LeBron. So I still think it's a joke, but if it's not, then I think that Kyrie's making a bad decision. I think him and LeBron are both making a bad decision because you're talking about who has the best opportunity to compete with the Dubs, not necessarily beat them, but compete with them. It was the Cavaliers with those two, because those are two dominant guys that can take over games. And I don't see where Kyrie can go and necessarily go get that type of support, especially in the East. I don't think that there's anyone in the East. Now, he can come over to the West if he wants to look at San Antonio, because San Antonio has a great, some good players there. He can look at some other teams. But I don't think in the East that he's going to get any closer by joining anyone there in the East.
Dibs, Kyrie Irving has made a ton of money. He's won an NBA championship. He's been to three straight finals, and he faces, and this is the key, literally no pressure. No pressure. All of it's on LeBron James. That's the beauty of playing with LeBron. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, no pressure in Miami. All the pressure on LeBron. Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, no pressure. It's all on LeBron. Why would you want to step out from that?
Because you've already made your money, you've made generational wealth, you're 25 years old, and you don't want to be left holding the bag if LeBron James spends next year mulling over where he's going to go again, the decision part two. You have 2 years left in your deal. So if you play out this season and totally blind to what's going on with LeBron James, the end of the year comes. You probably don't get over on the Warriors. Apologies to the Jose Calderon move and Derrick Rose coming in as well. You're still not as good as Golden State. LeBron decides to leave and take his talents elsewhere. You're still under contract for one more year. What are you going to do? You're going to have to stick it out. They're not going to trade you then. If you come out as disgruntled now with 2 years left in your deal and you say, I don't want to play with LeBron anymore. And LeBron says what, according to Stephen A. Smith, he did say. So now the relationship's totally fractured. Kyrie can be traded anywhere. He doesn't have a no-trade clause. Go somewhere for two seasons. And at that point, he'll be in a position where he can pick his next destination and choose who he wants to play with.
If you want to be the star and you know LeBron's leaving, why wouldn't you just stay in Cleveland? They drafted you. City already loves you. You've helped deliver a title. And when LeBron's gone, they're going to love you the way Oklahoma City loves Russell Westbrook. When KD left, that opened the door for Russell Westbrook to become the most beloved athlete in that area's history. Same thing would happen for Kyrie. He was there pre-LeBron. He'd be there through LeBron leaving the second time. So why wouldn't you just stay in Cleveland?
And I don't know why you wouldn't. And not just stay in Cleveland, Joe. If he goes anywhere in the East, and now, and if you look at what the Cavs have done, no. Did they go out and get some superstars? No. Did they get some washed-up superstars that could show some signs? Yeah. But if they stay healthy, where and who in the East still? If now LeBron's going to, if this is really the truth, now LeBron's going to play with that added incentive. He don't care if he's a seventh seed. They don't care if they're the last seed in the East. If he's healthy and that team that he has right now with Kyrie, not with Kyrie, but with Love and Shumpert and the guys that he has there, who in the East still, if he wants to turn it on to say, you know what, I'm going to burn this place down, I'm leaving, but I'm going to show him that I can still go to Eastern Conference, fine, I'm still go to the NBA Finals. They can't beat the Dubs. But who's out there that you think is going to beat them still? If he decides, and if they stay healthy, will they still be the favorite? I would probably think so.
I got no beef whatsoever with a guy wanting to go out on his own, stake his own claim. That's what he thought he was going to have in Cleveland, and then LeBron came back. So I got no problem whatsoever if Irving's decided, you know what, I want to go out and do my own thing. I don't want to be in this guy's shadow. Totally understand the situation. But I'll tell you what, right now, if he leaves, he will never have it better than he has it now. The rest of his career will never reach this point. Number one, where's he going to go that he gets to be the star, but also gets to be in serious contention? That place does not exist. You will not be in a better team environment with you being the star. You go to San Antonio, sorry, son, that's Kawhi Leonard's team. That ain't your team. And if you had a problem with LeBron, you're going to have a problem in San Antonio. This is the same thing that happened with James Harden. Harden was playing in OKC behind Durant and behind Westbrook, and he wanted to stake out on his own. Nothing against that. So he ends up in Houston. It's his team. Right up until who comes in? Dwight Howard. And what was the result there? A horrific season in which they had to run Dwight Howard out of town. Now, we know Dwight Howard's been run out of every place he's ever been because he's a malcontent and he's the classic underachiever. Number one overall, will never live up to the hype. But Harden, when he finally got it his own way, couldn't handle life with another superstar. What do you think's going to happen with Chris Paul there? Everyone just assumes those two are going to get along. Chris Paul is very difficult to play with. Everybody in Los Angeles, Griffin, Jordan, they've all said it. They all know it. You think Harden is suddenly going to get along with Chris Paul when he wanted out of a situation like that in OKC and couldn't handle it with Dwight Howard? And now you're talking about throwing Melo into the mix? Come on. Same thing with Irving. You can go somewhere where you're the star, but you will not compete in this version of the NBA, the juggernaut team version of the NBA. You will not compete if you're the focal point. So you can either shack up with two other superstars, in which point you're right back where you started, or you can control the show in Miami, for example, or in New York with the Knicks, and you won't go anywhere. Kyrie Irving's peaked. This is the greatest it will ever be, and once he's traded, he's never going to get back to this point ever again.
I don't necessarily believe that. I think that if he wants to stay and be the man in Cleveland, that's a dead end. If you go to Miami or New York, those are dead ends, but you can go somewhere. If you get traded and you have 2 years left in your deal, when that's finally over and you're a free agent, you're 27, then you can take a look at any other situation. And if you go to play with Kyrie in San Antonio, maybe it's more amenable to your style of play than playing with LeBron was. Who knows what the collection of stars will be in two seasons. I think if you're Kyrie, job number one is get out of Cleveland and not be left holding the bag when LeBron leaves at the end of this season.
But what's so bad about that? You're not taking any heat for that. None of that's on you. You're going to be loved.
Yeah.
If you're left holding the bag, you're left holding the bag where an entire city is going to embrace you. You don't have to enjoy Cleveland, but you're not going to be the fall guy. James is the fall guy. You don't take any of that heat. You do realize that right now he doesn't have to listen to his coach and he doesn't have to play defense. He's got no pressure and he's in the NBA Finals every year. Where's it going to get better than that? San Antonio, you're not getting past the Warriors, and Popovich is going to expect you to play defense. Plus, you're not even the star of that team, Kawhi Leonard is. Where else did he say he wanted to go? Minnesota? Okay, you're not getting past the Warriors. Thibodeau is going to expect you to play defense, and he is going to ride you hard during game 22 of the regular season, where in Cleveland you'd be able to take the night off under Tyronn Lue. Where are you going to go of his other four choices? The Knicks? What are you going to do in New York? You can be the toast of the town. You can be the star. You ain't contending. You're not going to beat anybody. So where else you want to go? Miami? Pat Riley is going to hold you accountable. Pat Riley is going to expect you to be the leader of that team and play both ways. You're not going to be able to take nights off. You are going to face pressure. You will not find a better situation than you have right now. That's, some could argue that Kyrie Irving's got the easiest gig in the NBA.
Well, he still is in Cleveland. If LeBron leaves at the end of next year and Kyrie stays, you find yourself, yeah, maybe getting a max deal, but you're in Cleveland playing for Dan Gilbert in life after LeBron. And to me, it'd be better to go somewhere else and fall short of a title aspiration than to sit there in post-LeBron Cleveland, because every time you fail in Cleveland, it's going to be, we should have never let LeBron go. We should have traded Kyrie. So I think to be in Cleveland after LeBron leaves would be a lot more harmful and a lot more pressure-packed than being in any of those other situations.
I just think that, like you said, Joe, I'm going through in my mind and trying to put him in great places where he's going to have the best opportunity. It's with LeBron. And no matter how you cut it and slice it and look at it, the reason why Steph Curry is able to do what he does, because can he dribble? Absolutely. But he's a guy that wants to get rid of the ball. He doesn't like necessarily taking over and doing like Kyrie. Kyrie is even more ball-dominant person than Steph. It works because Steph has other guys on that team, the Klay Thompson, the Draymond, and different guys that could step up and light it up just like him. And he has a good supporting cast, and now even KD. I've never seen, except with the exception of Iverson, a little man that can take over a game and be that dominant and didn't need necessarily any help around him. Steph couldn't be as dominant if he didn't have Draymond Green, he didn't have Klay Thompson, didn't have those shooters, didn't have, even though won MVP, that supporting cast and that system, the way the ball moves, help him because he's such a prolific shooter. Kyrie now is going to have to go build a team and understand that it's not a little man's necessarily game. What Steph's been able to do is unprecedented, but he has other guys around him that are dominant players. Kyrie it's going to be tough that you think, okay, I'm going to be MVP or I'm going to be this guy. It's hard because it's not necessarily predicated for a little man's game because he's not a prolific shooter like Steph. Steph won MVP back-to-back years because he can do something that no one in the history of this game is able to do. Dominate shooting the three ball from halfway outside the gym, doesn't matter. That's why the flash, that's what Steph done, broke records. Kyrie can't go anywhere. It's not a little guy's point guard game for him to go and take over and be dominant and win championships.
People keep suggesting Boston. Let me tell you something about Boston. How are you going to be the star? Boston is a racist town. Who's the number one player in Boston history? Larry Bird. Some will say Bill Russell, but most would say Larry Bird. That's a racist town. If they're choosing between Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, who do you think the people of Boston are choosing? Plus, Hayward goes back 10 years with head coach Brad Stevens. You go to Boston, you're not the star. You're the point guard on the team that's run by Gordon Hayward. Fact. That's the situation.
Now, back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
We've got $1,000 to give away at the top of the hour, 7 o'clock, as well as at 8 o'clock, and we'll be giving away tickets at 8:45. Joe, Low, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Juicy, juicy nuggets on the San Francisco Niners coming up in just a moment. But Tamir's on hold. He wants to talk Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. He just texted me to let me know he'll stay on hold all day. We're not going to do that to you, Tamir. Floor's open, my friend. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Love the show, as always. I just want to say, I think that everybody has their points, but I don't think there's conspiracy like Lowe's saying. I think that Kyrie and maybe other Cavs players are just fed up, because when you see it on TV, it's LeBron James, when they win, he's the greatest thing ever. And then when they lose, he has no help. So maybe Kyrie, as an all-star, he gets his points. He's like, what am I, chopped liver? So, like, they keep – maybe they never got along. And it's just, like, it's just fed up, because when they lose, it's like, oh, I need more help. I don't have anybody. Or we're top-heavy. It's just me, me, me. Like, when LeBron lost in the finals, he's, like, you know, smiling and stuff, and he was happy with it. Maybe Kyrie's like, I'm hurt. We lost. You're over here smiling, saying you got yours, though. So that's just how I feel on that.
Fair point. Appreciate the phone call as always. Thank you very much, Tamir. Lo, he thinks you're just a damn fool to
He won't be the only one.
To take his reasonable sentiment and try to throw some gas on it and then light it on fire.
You're right. He's not the only one. But I don't know. I just see hell. It's just hard, you know, to fathom what's going on there in Cleveland, a team that, you know, that everyone said is the only team out there that is a formidable opponent for the Dubs, and he's willing to walk away. You know, sometimes there's pride before the fall. And I know LeBron is a very demanding athlete. He wants to win championships, and so does Kyrie and everyone on that whole team. I think this is a guy that always respects Kyrie. There's nothing, and where I disagree with Tamir, you have never seen him disrespect Kyrie. He's always giving Kyrie the ball. Kyrie, hell, you just looked at the numbers. He shot the ball more than LeBron. He held the ball more than LeBron. Here's a guy that is a very integral part. And everyone that watched basketball doesn't look at this guy as a second fiddler to LeBron.
The Warriors broke this team. I mean, they're done. I don't see them winning the East next year. You guys talked about it yesterday. You both feel that someone else will win the East. That's it. That's it. The trilogy's done. The Cavaliers won't have what it takes next year. And for anyone who wants to say, well, they're bringing in Derrick Rose, Derrick Rose is coming in at 1 year, $2.1 million. That's everything you need to know about what Derrick Rose is capable of achieving. Remember, if Timothy Mozgov is going to get $16 million a year, $2 million for Derrick Rose tells you everything you need to know about what he's capable of giving you.
He's basically on a prove-it sort of contract. If he can return to some form, go out an average maybe 15 coming off the bench, then maybe he gets a 3-year deal somewhere else, 3 years and $20 million, but he's not going to be the max player that he once was. Injuries have robbed him of his explosiveness and his bounce, and this is probably a great destination for him, especially with the scepter of maybe Kyrie Irving being traded. He could then slide into the starting spot and really go out and get a bigger contract when he and LeBron and everyone else leave Cleveland after the end of next year.
Man, I used to love D-Rose. When he had so much explosion getting to the rack, I used to love that dude. And then, what was it, like 3 years ago, he had those comments about taking nights off because he's got to preserve his body for walking his kids down the aisle and showing up for graduations. Yeah. It's like, what are you talking about, dude? You're playing hoops. You're getting paid a ton of money. The people of Chicago don't want to hear that. And then this past year, didn't he just go MIA on the Knicks? Do people forget that?
Yeah, didn't show
he
up.
He just disappeared and didn't come to a game because he didn't feel like it.
You're right. It's so weird to me. Only $2 million a year. And honestly, no.
No, you're right, Lo.
That's not good.
For
the NBA standard, that's a bottom feeder salary.
It's a pittance.
Look at Barnes.
It's with the commoners.
You're right. Less than commoners. I mean, come on. He's down there with JaVale McGee. No, I mean, think about what
you're
he's
right.
I'm serious.
McGee will probably make more when he inevitably
signs. And you saw our guy Barnes goes to Dallas getting $16-20 million a year. So it's interesting to see how this guy, who was a MVP of the league, has announced $2 million. Just goes to show you how quick this guy fell off grace.
All right, to the Niners we go. Promised a juicy nugget. I've got a juicy nugget. Camp opens in 2 days. Rookies and veterans will report. One of the veterans reporting is running back Carlos Hyde. However, the question becomes, how long will he be with the organization? What? First of all, go to 957thegame.com for the Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by FH Daily and Novato Chevrolet if you'd like to weigh in on this topic. Greg Rosenthal, we've had him on the show before, NFL.com, been around a long time. He is on the Around the NFL podcast recently, and he had this to say, quote, Coach Kyle Shanahan was going to be sick and dreaming of rookie Joe Williams if the team didn't draft him, according to the Monday Morning Quarterbacks' Peter King. So general manager John Lynch wound up trading up to get a guy in Williams who wasn't even on his draft board. Rosenthal continues, compare that investment, emotional and otherwise, with the team's lukewarm appraisals of Hyde this offseason. A talented and extremely elusive runner, Hyde has 1 year left on a contract signed three head coaches ago. He's admittedly the biggest long shot to lose his job on this list, but Shanahan and Lynch are just starting their extreme makeover and have proven they are ready to act with conviction. This all came in the context of a discussion who could be some surprise cuts by the end of the preseason, and Rosenthal said he heard from a little birdie that you shouldn't be surprised if the Niners cut Carlos Hyde. Lo, your thoughts when you hear something like that?
I know John wanted to jump up and draft. He drafted because Shanahan brought him in as the GM. So let's just put it in layman terms. Shanahan has a good relationship. John doesn't want to rock the boat, so he drafts him. But I think this is where where the rubber has to meet the road. As a GM, you say, you brought me in. Hey, Cal, I get it. I'm a little older than you. You know what? I know we both know football. I know football just as well as you do. They're both on equal playing fields when it talks about just X's and O's. A GM, you know, just is out of, you know, John hasn't done this well, but this is where he's got to step in and say, I can't cut this guy. I understand you want to go in another direction, but by the end of the year, by, you know, midseason, if you want to have this guy starting, if he's shown that he can do it, then let's do it. But here's what you got to do. You look at Carlos Hyde and during the season or before the season, you try to trade this guy. You try to move this asset because I believe he's a good running back. You don't just necessarily trade him. The Niners need this team is far away from winning a Super Bowl right now. So why not get this pick? And if John and those guys want to trade him, collectively, they need to pick up the phone and start trying to shop him around to different teams because I think this guy is a good running back, you know, top 10, 15 running backs in the league when healthy.
It's strange to consider this because the Niners have more money than anyone when it comes to the salary cap, right? That's number one. Number two, Carlos Hyde is making $822,000 this year with a $100,000 workout bonus. So all said and done, he's not even going to make $1 million.
Right.
He's in the final year of his four-year contract, which means in a contract year, you're probably going to get the most focused, in-shape, energized running back imaginable. So even if you don't like him, why not play out the season, Dibs, and then from there, just let him hit free agency if you don't like him.
Especially when you don't have a lot of other options at running back. I know they brought in Hightower, and they've got Joseph Williams, the rookie you talked about, the draft pick.
Love that kid.
You need, in this day and age, even though you may want to throw the football a lot, and you'll probably be behind in a lot of games, and you will have to throw the football, you need at least three running backs these days.
You need a thumper.
Yeah, and that's Carlos Hyde. And like you say, Joe, in a contract year, you see how motivated he is to go out there. And can he stay healthy? That's really been the biggest knock is his inability to stay on the field. So see what you got. 800 grand, a bargain. If he has a good year, then maybe you re-sign him. If not, you let him go and you cut your losses.
Who's the running back in Indy that everyone loves, who's getting a little older?
Frank Gore, son. You see, he's real close to moving up to like fourth on the all-time list. Very quietly, Frank Gore
Hall of Fame copy
is going to pass some notable names this season.
He is. And so why wouldn't John Lynch, who knows Harbaugh, who knows Pagano really well, why wouldn't he pick up the phone and say, you have a guy, an aging guy. If you're going to get rid of this guy, trade the asset. Trade him over to a place like that where you got now Frank Gore. You're going to keep him fresh. Those two guys can run together. You don't just cut a running back like that. There is a lot of suitors out there. Hell, San Diego. There is a lot of places that this guy could go and play right now. Hell, Philadelphia, be in the mix over there.
They're about to cut Ryan Matthews.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at what he can bring to any team, If you don't want him, if that's your running back of the future, go get something for him. Trade him to one of these teams and get a draft pick.
It's a great point. Good friend of the program, Eric Davis, used to work here at 95.7 The Game. He was on with Papa and Bonte yesterday. If you're a Niner fan looking for some optimism this season, take a listen to this.
Looked at me side-eye when I said, whichever team between the Niners and the Rams sweeps the other will probably be in a fight for a playoff spot with the Dallas Cowboys.
Come on now. Come on now. Dibs, you know ED.
Love ED.
What do you think about that?
Well, I'm the one actually responsible for bringing ED to the station. I've known ED a long time. And
who aren't you responsible for bringing to the station?
You.
Okay, one.
But I'm happy you're here, Joe, but I digest. I'm a big fan of ED. He played football for a long time, and he knows more football than I'll ever forget, or whatever that damn expression
He'll
is.
He'll forget more football than you'll ever know.
Both are equally true. But in this case, I'm not seeing it the way he sees it. Either the Rams or the Niners, if they sweep the other, you're still looking at 5 or 6 wins at the best for either one. So, ED, I'm going to have to politely and respectfully disagree.
He just got him 2 wins.
Likelihood. Well, I mean, yeah. First of all, it doesn't necessarily – there's no guarantee the Rams sweep the Niners or the Niners sweep the Rams, right?
Right.
So
right.
Even
right.
If the Niners sweep the Rams, let's just assume they did what they did last year. What's the likelihood they challenge for a playoff spot?
Slim to none, and none has left the building. With all due respect, they're going to be a tougher physical team, and they're going to play with a lot more bravado. I like what they're doing. And Dibs were responsible for me to come to the show, too. Got me the gig here. He put me on the show with Alyssa Milano, and I wooed her on Low on Love,
Alyssa Milano.
It's a great
This
highlight.
Is the Super Bowl show in New Orleans, right?
Yes, yes. And at a later date, we'll play it, and you guys get to see Dibs brought my skills out to the forefront.
Wow.
And he really just set me up and teed me up, and they didn't think your boy had skills. So, yes, Dibs, I owe you thank you as well.
This is the origin of Low on Love, from what I understand.
Yes, we were already working it throughout that season, but that was the culmination of Low on Love. He brought it. It became a live show, and it immediately went from a nice, fun PG bit to NC-17, Joe.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it really was riveting.
He kicked up about 5 notches on her.
I mean, she was blushing and everything, but as I digest, I don't want to toot my own horn, but thank you, Dibs,
but that's
for that
exactly what you just did. You can't just say that at the end. Guys, I don't want to brag. You just brag for 5 minutes.
But yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're all out of time.
Oh, man. Eric Davis, you got out the hook.
Now back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Very happy to welcome in the head coach of your Oakland Raiders, Jack Del Rio, with Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Coach Del Rio, thank you for your time this morning. Camp's underway, but how'd your summer treat you?
Everything's good. Good morning, everybody. It was a good, restful time, and now energized, ready to roll. Looking forward to it.
So as you bring the rookies into camp, it's a year with a lot of expectations. You've got your franchise quarterback under contract, beast mode on the roster as well. What's going to be the opening message to the team when you get them all together later in the week?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us is to recognize, hype or discussions or expectations or preseason ranks or whether or not we're going somewhere else in 3 years or those kinds of things are all it's all noise, and it all has very little to do with who we are and what we're about. I think our focus will be on understanding what our standard is and understanding what the processes are that we must go through to become a really good football team. And so that's going to be the message. Let's get to work.
Coach, I couldn't agree with you more. And, Coach, talk about that, just that process. What is the biggest difference from being a position coach, which you had to go through, from a coordinator to a head coach, in keeping everyone together?
Yeah, I think it's when you're a position coach, you're just concentrating on your guys, and it's really, how does it affect my group? When you become a coordinator, you're working with your side of the ball, then it becomes more about just that, how do I take care of my side of the ball? When you're a head coach, it's everybody. It's everything, it's everyone, and it's having everybody really understand that, the things that are really great that you want to accomplish in this league come when people understand what it is to sacrifice for each other, and that there's something greater than yourself out there. And so when you understand that concept of doing what's best for us and doing what's best for the team, and then you're the best individual you can be, doing your role on that team, then you can do great things.
Coach, Gary and Conley and Obi Melifonwu yet to be signed, and with the rookies already reporting, are they starting to get to the point where they're going to fall behind, or is it really not until next week when the heavy work starts getting put in that they'll need to be in place?
Well, you know, the rules and the structure are such that it's not a great concern now in our league. I think these issues will get resolved shortly, and they'll join the team. So, you know, it's one of those situations. Years ago, you know, when Lowe and I were out there, those were issues. I mean, those were real issues. Holdouts were, you know, could last the whole camp into the season, all that kind of stuff. The structure is in place now. We expect these things to get resolved shortly, and they'll be in getting their work in.
Head coach Jack Del Rio with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. So as it pertains to Gary and Conley and his situation, the organization is confident that he will be in camp sometime in the very near future?
Yeah, really nothing's changed from the way we feel about it. And we understand there's a process underway. And, you know, when they finish that process, you know, we feel confident about the decision we made and the person that we have.
Coach, you know, back in our day, 9-on-7, didn't matter. Every day in pads. Now the game has changed. And you see everyone talks about the Raiders. And you understand that as the head man. People, what's the perception versus reality? Reality is, hey, the defensive line kind of struggled. Not necessarily was one of the worst teams. Gave up over 60 plays with 20 yards or more. When you're looking at that and you say, everyone was still saying, hey, the Raiders supposed to be in a Super Bowl. How do you let guys and the team and coaches and your staff know perception versus reality, and you're never as good as everyone think you are, and you're never not as bad as everyone think you are?
Yeah, I think the way we look at it, we acknowledge, look, we know we've got a good team. We know we can play with anybody. We know we're good in all three phases. And, you know, the how you rank on last year's stats and how that projects going forward is more for fantasy leagues than it is for what we're doing. So, you know, we're busy at work. We've got a good group of guys. We've added to it. Obviously, there have been some subtractions like there are every year. There's some additions, some subtractions. You change the team a little bit. But we feel like we've strengthened ourselves coming out of the offseason, and we're excited about getting started. And in all three phases, have a lot of work to do for us to become the kind of team that we are going to become.
One of the new players, obviously, Marshawn Lynch. Do you envision it to be somewhat of a committee at running back, or is he coming in with the idea of he'll be the featured back and maybe looking to get 200-plus carries this year?
Well, you know, we'll see how many carries and what the plan is. You know, for me, we just love having been able to add a guy like Marshawn that has such great passion for our franchise. He's obviously a big physical runner. And runs with attitude. And so, you know, we know it can help our power game. But the biggest thing is we added a good player. We're going to, like we do with all our players, we, you know, have him come in, be a good teammate. You know, we'll let him express himself. You know, we'll determine a role based on what we think is best for us as a team. And we'll ask him to embrace that. And then we'll go. And, you know, we're not going to sit here and worry about, I mean, I know it's probably for your listeners important for like fantasy projections and things, but we're just not going to get into that kind of stuff. But we're certainly glad to have him.
Coach, do you enjoy following Marquette King on social media as much as we do?
You know what? I love that young man. As long as he leaves the flags alone and doesn't throw the flag at the referee and just does his thing on the field, he has a lot of fun off the field with the social media and everything, and I'm all for it.
Coach, you know everybody's a little different. Marquette King, he walks by his own drum. I tell you, we love him. But
he did tell us you gave him a stern talking to after that flag incident.
Yeah. He heard a little bit from me and Coach Seeley.
Oh, no question. Rightfully so. I mean, Jim Moore, he would talk to you. You'd about be shaking in your boots. Another guy, disciple of Jim Moore, and this guy that I've been around, I think you could attest to this. Pagano, you know, what does he bring, and you feel about, you know, what is he going to help with the defense and just the structure? Kind of what is his role and what are you expecting from him?
Yeah, John's a great addition to the staff. He's a good people person. He's a very, very good communicator. He's got a lot of knowledge. To have John come in and work with us and the defensive staff throughout the offseason was I think, very beneficial. You know, John's an assistant head coach with the defense. What he will do is basically he'll be over the top of the secondary, having an extra set of eyes, being able to provide input to Kenny and I. And, you know, he's just an asset, just a good, strong coach that has a lot of experience. We'll bring ideas to our third down packages in our red zone. But the biggest thing is that he is, he is going to make sure the back end is communicating and functioning properly.
One camp battle that many fans are going to have their eye on is middle linebacker. I know you can't obviously say who the front runner is, but what type of player are you looking at for that critical spot on defense?
Well, look, we've got some young guys that are excited about the opportunity to compete there. I think that we'll just let them compete and let it work itself out. We drafted a young man, Markell. And we got a couple guys returning like Corey James. And so, we'll let them compete. We'll see where it goes. I feel like when I look at us, as a football team, I think we've strengthened ourselves and really fortified ourselves in many, many positions, and maybe haven't been able to go get that, early round pick at that position yet, or that obvious stud. From another team in terms of a veteran or anything, but we've got some young guys that can run, and they're determined to learn and to apply themselves, and we're going to let them compete, and we're going to grow there. And that's you got a couple ways to address it. You can draft high, you can get a free agent high and pay a lot of money, or you can develop a guy. And right now we're looking to develop a guy, and we'll continue to monitor what's out there as well. But that's how we're going to address it as we sit here today.
Coach Del Rio, how's everything going with Carl Joseph? The rookie battled some injuries last season, but how's he looking right now in terms of health and his expected role for the upcoming year?
Yeah, we drafted him. We think he's a dynamic football player, an impact kind of player. And he had a little bit of a knee that he had to work through last year. When we came out, we knew that he was going to be take a little bit of time to get back to full strength. I think as he went through last year, got some experience, got to play a little bit, did some good things, did some things he'll do better, take that experience, had a really strong offseason, really good communicating, really good in working hard. And I just feel like he's poised to have a real big year. So, again, it's all set there, and now we're just going to go out there and compete.
Coach, you've played for some great teams. You coached some great teams. You've been around this league, and everyone talks about how it's a quarterback-driven league. Your trigger man is signed, and now the clock starts. And every year there's free agents, and people are going to be trying to pluck your guys. How do you deal with that? How do you understand that football goes in fads? And once you're hot, and then it's going to be years where you're down. Is that window now? Guys understand how just the dynamics of the game, and how do you keep them, focused on the task at hand?
Well, there's no question. We're really, really pleased to have Derek signed, and know that we've got the premium position or the premier position signed up, and we have a real capable guy there, great leader, great young man, talented, tough, all the things you're looking for. So we're super happy to have that done, and also getting a guy like Gabe Jackson done. Having Gabe done and know that we've fortified that front line, that's going to protect Derek and open holes for Marshawn. Those are important things. So, for us, I know for Derek, he's a young player, but we want to attack each year, like you don't know that you have, 15 more. We don't want to wait till we're,
sure.
Tom Brady's going to turn 40 here soon. And, he's racked up a lot of titles along the way. So, for us, for Derek, we just want to go get that first one. And, the biggest thing is just to improve as a football team, be ready to go compete, embrace our standards, embrace our processes, and let's go to work. And that's, when you have that position and you can check that box, that's a great place to start.
Oakland Raiders head coach Jack Del Rio with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Coach, we know you're a busy man. Thank you very much for your time this morning. We greatly appreciate it. Best of luck in camp, and hopefully we can do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, well, we'll do it when you guys get up here. You guys will be up here soon. We got the rookies that are going this week, and then we'll have the veterans reporting on Friday. So looking forward to seeing you guys up here.
Sounds great, Coach. Thank you very much again. Good luck this week.
All right, take care.
Now back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
For those who have been hanging with us for quite a while today, you've noticed the WWE intro music theme. That's in honor of the beef between LeBron James and Kyrie Irving.
It's great. I'm digging it, Joe. I'm not a big wrestling fan, but some of these tunes, I'm remembering the connection with the associated wrestler.
Well, that's key because we're giving away tickets now, and it's going to be a WWE-centric question.
Look at you.
This is your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to the Ellie Mae Classic at TPC Stonebray, beginning Monday, July 31st, and running until Sunday, August 6th. All winners qualify for a grand prize VIP experience, which includes four VIP passes, fully catered hospitality, and round-trip limo service to the event. Tickets and info available at LEMayClassic.com. And by the way, two-time MVP Steph Curry will be playing in this event. 888-957-9570. First one to answer the following question correctly. Who defeated Randy Macho Man Savage for the WWF Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania 3? 888-957-9570. Who defeated Randy Macho Man Savage for the WWF Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania 3? Arguably considered one of the greatest matches of all time. Do you do a good Macho Man?
Nah, it's about all I do. My Macho Man sounds too much like my Duff Man from The Simpsons. That's really good. That's really good.
Oh, Duff Man.
Yeah. He was sweet. I liked the Macho Man.
Someone, you know how like you'll scroll through Facebook and you'll just get these random videos that are popping up on just whatever?
Right.
There was one that was just like, it was an interview with Hogan and Macho Man. I think it was Mean Gene Okerlund doing the interview. And the two of them were just going nuts. You know how overly dramatic they were.
Of course.
And it was like, try watching this video on acid. And obviously, I'm not going to try that. But I went back and watched the video, and they edited it so like there were swirls and like, you know, all these interesting effects. And you're listening to them, and it's like, oh, my God, if you were on heavy drugs watching WWE back in the day, like this would have really freaked you out, like the stuff they were saying, just the way they were acting. Like Macho Man always looked like he was ready to explode.
Ready to explode. All red and just has always got that voice. This is the Macho Man. Will I get you, brother? And they're always, their veins coming out of their neck. I just love watching it.
Good God, man. 888-957-9570. We want to talk Raider football. Jack Del Rio joined us about 20 minutes ago. He talked about Gary and Conley, Marshawn Lynch, the future of the team. Sounded like a calm individual ready for training camp. He sounded exactly like what you would want from a head coach who's in control. We want to know your expectations for this season. We want to know your biggest concerns heading into this season, because this season is unlike any of the last 15 years. Expectations are that you will find yourself in the AFC Championship game. I think you have a lot of Raider fans who are going to be disappointed if this team can't get to the AFC Championship game. So what are the biggest concerns and obstacles to getting there? 888-957-9570. Paul in Redwood City, will begin with you. Paul in Redwood City, your expectations for this season? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
nice.
Little Macho Man shout out there. Love listening to you guys in the every morning on my commute. I think the expectation should be simple. Make the playoffs. You got to be in it to win it. I think if they can squeak in 10-6, just get into the playoffs, and then get that one playoff win we've been hoping for the last few years, I think that's what really they got to focus on, just getting into the playoffs like a New York Giants team, squeak in there, make a run, come in hot, and give the fans what they want.
Appreciate the phone call, Paul. Thank you very much.
I
just
like that.
Making the playoffs. Dibs, how do you stand?
10-6, Joe, is right where I am with this team. Brutal schedule. You have New England in Mexico. You only have 7 home games. I think 10-6 is reasonable. Get in the playoffs and win that first playoff game. That, to me, is where the bar is set. Then you go into the final 8. Certainly you want to make the conference championship, but I think 10-6 and winning a playoff game, that's a fair bar for this team.
Congratulations to Justin in San Jose on winning the tickets. The answer to the question, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. That's who challenged Randy the Macho Man Savage at WrestleMania 3 for the Intercontinental Championship. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Lo, outside of the Patriots, who's the biggest threat to the Raiders to get to the AFC Championship game?
Ooh, no you didn't.
Yes, I did.
you look at the AFC and you think of, you always got to think of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Don't know if they're going to be that team this year. You look at the Houston Texans. I think the Houston Texans, the defense that they have, getting a young quarterback, that's going to be, I think, the question mark. But you don't have to go out and win, guess, take over games. If they can manage games because of the defense is good enough, they're going to be a team that you're going to say is formidable. And I think another team, Joe, that I really believe that this is going to be that year again, and Joey Flacco. I think the Ravens are going to be a lot better this year. I'm not really sold on Pittsburgh with some of the things that are going on, and I like what they're doing. Over, of course, we like Tennessee. This AFC is going to be some new kids on the block. You know, New England's always going to be New England, but I think there's going to be some new kids on the block. I don't believe, I'm willing to take a bet with you that no one in the AFC South, our division is here, was going to win more than 11 games.
It's You mean the West?
West.
Okay.
The West, I think 10 or 11 is going to win it. I don't see any team winning 12 in this particular conference in the West. It's just too tough.
Houston's intriguing because they'll probably have the best defense in the AFC. The problem, however, is the same problem Houston's had since day one of their existence, the quarterback position.
Right.
If they can't get capable quarterback play, they're not going anywhere. Even with the league's best defense, even with one of the best all-time defenses, you still need a guy who can move the sticks, convert on third down, and protect the football. And I'm not sure they have that yet.
And he might get hot at the right time. And that's the thing. That's why I said I got to see what he does, this young quarterback. You've seen him with the stage being big in college, and you saw the way that he was able to play. But so now you got to look at this young Clemson quarterback and say, can he translate that college play to the NFL? And I think, Joe, they might struggle early, but once the playoffs and once the end of the season, he'll be hitting his stride because he's seen the defenses. So Houston could be a very formidable opponent because of the way they play defense. And now you have a quarterback that you got to what? Contain, because he can beat you with his legs as well.
You know me, love Deshaun Watson. It's just a lot to ask of a rookie.
It is.
A lot to ask of a rookie. You also mentioned Baltimore. The Joe Flacco contract was the end of that organization. I just can't see it. It's no disrespect to John Harbaugh. I think he's a phenomenal head coach. And I think eventually, when he and the Ravens part ways, and I think that could be happening sooner rather than later, he's going to land somewhere, and whoever gets him, it's going to be a gem.
Right.
He's going to deliver a winner. But that Joe Flacco contract killed that organization. They got their Super Bowl. They shouldn't have paid him. They should have let him go. I know that sounds insane, and coming off that Super Bowl run, there was nothing you could have done except pay him, but that has crippled your organization since.
I totally understand. But let's just stay in that particular conference. That think about what's there. Baltimore, Cincinnati, what do you know about Marvin?
I know that Marvin will not win a playoff game.
Okay, now we're talking about, look at Pittsburgh. You look at what they have. I understand Big Ben is still there. Don't necessarily soul on their coach. Seems like there's some discard there. Their defense, your best defensive player is 39, 37 years old. When you look at that team, I just don't know if Pittsburgh is now, they can score. I don't know if their defense is what it is. So I think that Baltimore is poised to at least, I think they're going to make some noise this year. Really
I think it's still Pittsburgh's division. And I'm just reading an item about Kenneth Dixon for Baltimore. He's got a meniscus tear, so he's going to undergo surgery. That hurts him. I think Flacco doesn't have quite the weapons in the passing game that they used to have. And that division is so bottom weak. We talk about top heavy. The opposite of that is bottom weak. Cincinnati's going to struggle, and Cleveland is still ferocious. So yeah. I think when you look at Pittsburgh and Baltimore, those matchups, I think Pittsburgh is still the better team than Baltimore, and so they'll control the division accordingly.
No one's talking about Miami. I thought you liked Miami last
Tannehan.
Year. I thought you thought Tannehan and Adam Gase. I thought you thought that was going to be a breakthrough.
No, I did. I love Gase. I think he's the answer. And Miami, I like Miami.
The answer was Allen Iverson. Adam Gase is not the answer.
The guy that I don't like is Tannehan. Tannehan is a hung tooth.
He was a little bit better last year.
Put him in pressure situation, put him in there, and you see what he does. What
so no on Miami. Maybe they get in, but you don't see him making a lot of noise.
Until they get a quarterback. They do not have, let me tell you, that is not their quarterback of the future. They got some defense. They got some offensive weapons. They can do some things. He is not the answer.
Suspiciously absent from this conversation are the Chiefs, the Broncos, and the Chargers. No one at all has any threat of any of them as the team outside of New England that would be the biggest problem for the Raiders?
I think Lowe said it best, and he said it perfectly when he said that I don't think anyone in that division has more than 10 wins.
No.
And I think you're right. You may see three teams with 10 wins and then the fourth team with 9. I think it's going to be that close.
Me too.
Last year, Kansas City went 6-0 against the division. They were the only team in football to go undefeated against their division. I don't think that happens this year in the AFC West. I think it's going to be 4-2 and 3-3 and 2-4 among all four teams. I think it's going to be very competitive, and 10 wins might win that division.
I think it might be two or three teams get sneak in. I mean, this is going to be very competitive. I really believe you look at Denver. Denver just didn't do enough at quarterback. I think that defense get beats up. You know, they keep them out on the field too long. Alex Smith's going to be looking over his shoulder the whole year. Yeah, they're still the team. I'm telling you, San Diego and the Raiders – L.A. rather, and the Raiders, to me, those two teams are really, really going to fight. And I think that San Diego got a lot better defensively. L.A.'s got a lot better offensively and defensively. I'm going to keep saying San Diego.
No, the Chiefs are taking on water. I wouldn't be surprised if they went like 6-10 this year. You've got a situation where at the draft, you just decide – we're going to move up. We're going to take Patrick Mahomes. If you're Alex Smith, you're looking around like, what the hell is your deal,
trade
Andy
me.
Reid? He should be asking for a trade. And the Chiefs should be trading him, but they think they're still close enough. And they know Mahomes isn't ready because he's not. He comes from the Texas Tech system. He is nowhere near ready to play. So you've already created a situation that the first time Captain Checkdown checks down on 3rd and 8 for a 6-yard gain, the fans are going to be asking for Patrick Mahomes. So that's your number one problem. Number two, a month ago, you fire your general manager. Do you ever hear about that in New England or Seattle or Green Bay?
No.
Or any of the quality teams that compete year after year firing the GM a month before training camp? No. There's clearly a problem in the front office there. So you got a quarterback issue, because when you have two quarterbacks, you got no quarterbacks.
I agree.
You got a front office issue with the coaching staff, and now you got Tom Bahali taking to social media to call out Andy Reid and the team for the way they used him in last year's playoff loss to Pittsburgh. Take a listen to Andy Reid on his response to Tom Bahali.
Do I love the fact that he wants to play? Yeah, he's going to be 50 years old and probably still tweeting out those things that he wants to get in his plays. I love that about him. So will I talk to him when he gets here? Yeah, we don't want to do it through the media, the social media part of it and all that. And I mean, let's just talk about it. If you have a problem, let's talk about it.
Will you continue to ask yourself questions and then answer them? Yes, you probably will. Are you going to win the division this season? No, you probably aren't. This is a team that every time, has anyone noticed this? Every piece of news regarding the Chiefs over the last month has been something negative. Someone's getting fired. A controversy starting. Someone's upset about this. Someone's upset about that. They haven't even opened camp yet.
Pressure.
And they've already got all of these little issues bubbling to the surface. At some point, it's going to boil over. And they've got a 6-week stretch on that schedule that is an absolute backbreaker if they don't navigate the front end of it properly.
And isn't this the cycle of Andy Reid that we're used to seeing, where he goes to a new place, he does really well, they have high expectations, they fall just short, and then it starts to unravel? And I think now we're maybe at the beginning of the unraveling, because like you say, Joe, tough schedule, and if things go south on them early in the year and the fans start clamoring for the backup quarterback, it's going to be a complete show over there.
It's the exact same thing that happened in Philly. He came out of nowhere and drafted Kevin Cobb in the 2nd round. And all of a sudden, everyone was trying to figure out what was going on. Then there was the power play between him and Howie Roseman and Joe Banner. Banner got fired. Roseman took the power from Reed. The relationship was never the same. They brought in Vic. They got rid of McNabb. There was the T.O. thing. It was just one after another, and then it slowly fell apart. And then everyone realized it was time for a change. I'm not necessarily saying it's going to completely fall apart this year, but the Chiefs are not buttoned up. They are not buttoned up. That's a team that won the division and earned a bye last year. That ain't happening this season. They are not as big of a threat as they may seem. And that Thursday night, week 7 here at the Coliseum, is the bet of the year. The Raiders cover those 3 points. It's out there right now. Nobody wins in that spot. Nobody.
I agree with you, Joe. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to jump back on Pittsburgh real quick. I believe this is the last year for Tomlin. I believe that he's gone after this year. I don't think they're going to do as well. And I think they're going to move on. I don't think that they're going to be a top. They're going to play well. But I really believe the Raiders right now, and you look at San Diego, their window is closing. The Chargers, that is. I like to know it's L.A., but
until week 1.
Okay.
The text line has spoken. They don't want Dibs blowing the whistle until week 1.
Okay, week 1, Dibs, so you can't blow the whistle if I say Chargers. But anyway,
that's on me for calling it on you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.